Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Pleasure to be joined by Brady Henderson, ESPN's intrepid Seahawk reporter. We are not physically present at Seahawks training camp, at least as of right now, but Brady definitely is. Brady, we heard a bunch from Pete Carroll yesterday about what went on day one of training camp. What was the biggest takeaway, thing that was discussed after practice, biggest storyline that you lynched onto?
Yeah, probably the biggest piece of news was the update he had on KJ Wright. And remember, KJ Wright had off-season shoulder surgery, and it was the timing of it, just when it was revealed, it really sounded like, his timeline was unknown. And just talking to people in the organization, as recently as a month or so ago, it didn't really seem certain to me that KJ was going to be ready for the start of training camp. And, the fact that he was out there, that was a pretty good sign. And Pete Carroll said, afterwards that, they were even concerned that he might have to start camp on the physically unable to perform list. But he passed his physical and just made a very strong return. And so that was probably the biggest development. And then the next question becomes, okay, well, what happens with the linebacker core? Because there's a pretty big logjam there with more starting caliber players than they have starting spots. You're already wondering how they're going to get Jordan Brooks, the first round pick, on the field. I thought one way would have been, if KJ Wright isn't ready for the start of the season, then you would naturally just slide Jordan Brooks into that weak side linebacker spot. But it looks a whole lot more promising that Wright is going to be ready for the start of the season. And so that linebacker situation is going to have to be cleared up somehow.
What about Jamal Adams? What did Pete have to say about him?
Yeah, I mean, he's only been in the building for, a couple weeks now. So he was really just kind of giving his first impression of Jamal Adams, more so the individual as opposed to the player, just because, again, yesterday was the first time that, those guys were actually on the field doing football stuff as opposed to just strength and conditioning. But, he talked about Adams being, a competitive guy and somebody who was very eager to learn, wanting to get all the details right. And, just watching him at the start of practice yesterday, he was sort of having to learn how they practice. There was one moment where it was early in practice, and they were going through their, warm up type stuff. And there was a coach, I think it was their defensive backs coach, just Andre Curtis, just basically teaching him how to go through a certain drill. And so, he's kind of in that learning phase, and they're sort of learning him. But, the impression that Pete Carroll gave of his first impression about him was that he's a guy who seems eager to learn.
Now, Brady, on the other side of the ball, offensively, you had a couple new additions to the team. Greg Olsen, Philip Dorsett from a skill position standpoint, Carlos Hyde. What was Pete Carroll's thoughts on how those guys integrated to the team and to the offense in their first day of practice?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He didn't really go too in-depth on what he saw from those guys. I think Pete, usually likes to take a look at the film, and he's sort of bouncing around practice. I don't know if he's really honing in on any one specifically most of the time, but he did say that the work that Russell and Greg Olsen put in over the offseason, before they got here, and Wilson and Philip Dorsett for that matter, he did say that has paid dividends. And just watching a couple of those, I think it was a goal line drill that they were doing, and Russell connected with Greg Olsen there a few times. And there's no defenders there. You're just basically playing catch with a guy. It looked like something that they have done before. And so, somebody like me is not going to glean a whole lot from watching a drill like that. Pete spoke highly of the work that they did over the offseason just to get them, to kind of, I guess, make up for time that they lost that they would have had during a normal offseason program.
What are a few things that you're going to be keeping a close eye on as you watch camp develop, as you watch practice continue to go? What are some of those key things that you're watching out for?
I'm going to watch for Jamal Adams and how they use him. You know, just talking to people in the organization, that one of the terms I heard was chess piece. You know, and other people have described him as a weapon. And, you know, he's not going to be your average strong safety who just sits in the box there. I mean, I think he's going to mostly play in the box, but they're going to use him in a number of ways. As a pass rusher, we all know. So you guys have talked about the fact that he had 6.5 sacks last year, which is a number that just jumps out for any defensive back, matching up on athletic tight ends like George Kittle. And so things like that, you know, they're going to use him in a lot of different ways. And I think they're going to get creative with him. And, you know, for the price that they paid to get him, I think he needs to be more than just your average strong safety for them. And so that's going to be something I'm watching, is just the different ways that they use him. Going back to the linebacker conversation, I'm going to be interested to see who was where, just because, again, they've got kind of a question to sort out there. Is where are you going to put Jordan Brooks? Is KJ Wright going to move over to the strong side? What does that mean for Bruce Irvin on early down? So those are a couple things. And then you're always watching, you know, the new weapons on offense, just to see, again, how they seem to be meshing with Russell. And so those are the few things that come to mind.
Brady, you're out there, you're in person, you're watching the guys on the field. Did anyone physically look different? Like, I remember when Chris Carson came back one year and he cut out wings, which is shocking, and we were all just so shocked by his development. I mean, he looked like just completely jacked. We were like, this guy's going to run all over people. Did anyone have any kind of transformation that you saw?
Well, I don't know if it's a transformation, because it was actually the first time I've seen the guy on the field, but I will tell you a quick little story. I was watching the defensive lineman, and I see this big defensive tackle with the last name Robinson, and I'm thinking to myself, I can't remember a defensive tackle with the last name Robinson unless I somehow missed something. It turns out it was Alton Robinson, and he's a defensive end, but in my mind he looked as big as a defensive tackle. And so that's why I asked Pete Carroll afterwards if he had added weight, just because he seems bigger than the 260-something pounds that he supposedly was when they drafted him. And so I was curious, because in my mind, you know, the way I look at their defensive end rotation, you've got a lot more of those Leo body types, you know, the 6'3", you know, 260 guys, that's typically the smaller of the two defensive ends. They have a lot more of those guys than they do the five techniques, which are the Michael Bennett's and the, Red Bryant's kind of an outlier, but, you know, Michael Bennett and, Rasheem Green, LJ Collier, those are two of the three guys. Brandon Jackson, he's the third guy that they have there. So I was wondering if maybe he had put on weight to make a transition to the five technique, but apparently not. And so, that's one question I have, is who else is going to be that five technique guy, because they only, at least in my mind, they have three of those guys, whereas they have a lot more of the Leo types right now.
Hey, speaking of those Leo types, it's pretty hard to parse Pete Carroll sometimes, because he's always positive, but it didn't sound too encouraging when he gave an update on Daryl Taylor yesterday. What did you take from it?
Yeah, no, I mean, and, you know, Pete, I think he said, you know, I'm hoping within a couple of weeks that he can start to get back out there. And as we all know, as you just said there, he tends to look at everything, including injuries, as optimistic. And so I would not, I would take that with a grain of salt. And when he says 2 weeks, you know, that might be best case scenario. And then when you're talking about, you know, already having had no off-season program, there's not going to be any sort of, you know, preseason where everybody's just ramping up to the regular season. If he's not back in 3 weeks, or if he's not back for 3 weeks, then you got to wonder about his availability for the start of the season, because he's going to have to go through the same ramp up that everybody is going through right now. And so, that was not all that encouraging. And he was going to play, or he is going to play whenever he gets out there. They, you know, they expect him to play a pretty big part of their pass rush. And so that would put more on a guy I just mentioned, Alton Robinson, and everybody else. But yeah, I'm with you. That did not seem all that encouraging to me.
Talking to Brady Henderson of ESPN.com. Brady, with limited time here, how much more difficult do you think it's going to be for them to put together their offensive line and really see the O-line gel before the season gets started? Could this be one of those years where they don't really find themselves until well into the season?
Absolutely, yeah, and that's the big concern with that group. You know, they believe, and I believe it too, that on paper, their offensive line was better. You know, they feel like Brandon Schell is an obvious upgrade over Jermaine Ifedi. You know, BJ Finney is a much more stouter guy than Joey Hunt was playing center for most of last season. You know, Damian Lewis, he's a rookie, so he's, you know, going to have to find his way in, you know, not a lot of time. But, you know, they feel like their offensive line is better. But the question is, okay, that's the one position where, you know, probably is the hardest for those guys to gel. I remember asking an NFL talent evaluator this a couple months ago of, you know, what's the position that would be most impacted by not having an offseason program, you know, not having preseason. And his answer was the offensive line, just because continuity is so important, and those actual live reps are so important to those guys. And so, yeah, that group is going to be behind the eight ball. And, you know, these next few weeks are going to be probably as important for that group as any other position group on the team. And, I remember Pete Carroll saying a while ago that, you know, that was an area of concern for them, just looking back at 2011 when they had the lockout. And it was kind of, you know, similar circumstances where you just missed a lot of time there, and that was the group that came out of the gates very slowly. And so, yeah, that's definitely a concern for that group.
Brady, looking at some of the sounds from Pete Carroll here, and he had some thoughts on Marquise Blair, who is a unique guy to this competition, to the defensive back group. What do you make of that role potentially that he's going to carve out? What do you think is going to be the big difference for him, or what you're going to be looking for when you're out there at practice?
Yeah, I you know, if they had not traded for Jamal Adams and they still had, you know, Bradley McDougald, I absolutely believe that Marquise Blair would have been pushing Bradley McDougald for that starting spot. Obviously, you know, Jamal Adams is going to be starting at strong safety. And so now it's a matter of, you know, what kind of a role can Marquise Blair carve out for himself in the nickel? And I think, you know, from what I've heard, it's going to kind of be a matchup thing, right, where, you know, you have Ugo Amadi playing, you know, the nickelback or playing in that role against, you know, more traditional slot receivers, those smaller, quicker guys. And then when it's a bigger guy in the slot, say, you know, somebody like Larry Fitzgerald, who's a bigger wide receiver who a lot of times plays in the slot, or maybe it's, you know, an athletic tight end like George Kittle, maybe that's when you have somebody like Marquise Blair come in and play. So I think those two guys, Marquise Blair and Ugo Amadi, they're competing for time in the slot, but I think it's also going to be just based on the matchups, because those are, you know, Blair and Amadi are two very different body types who are going to match up against different types of receivers and or tight ends.
Brady, terrific job. I'm sure we'll be talking to you again as training camp goes on. Thanks very much.
You got it. Thanks for having me. See you.
Bye, Brady.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by MM Comfort Systems.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Okay, Jake, why is the Seahawk offense and defense at this point?
Well, to me, I believe that it's because they've been able to, one, have Russell Wilson as the quarterback, first and foremost. When your quarterback is a player of Russell's caliber, it's always going to make them better. But they've also been able to really take advantage of a weird time, a hard time to get together and throw. But they've been able to work together, Russell and some of the new pieces. And here in cut number six, Coach Carroll seeing how that worked is how that work has paid off.
The work that he's done with Greg Olsen and DK in particular, man, and Philip Dorsett, we're rolling. And you know, DK had a bunch of room to grow as a young guy. He had to learn Greg. Greg had to learn Russ. And same with Philip. And those guys are in here flying around. They look great. They look like they know what they're doing. And they already are showing the kinds of detail work that you have to work to earn. And Russell really was in the middle of making that happen.
So as you look at that soundbite, you have new pieces, Greg Olsen, Philip Dorsett. How are you able to integrate those pieces into your offense that can effectively help your offense flourish? Well, Russell took it into his own hands, and also noting that DK spent a lot of time with him. You talk about the concern of, can he keep improving? With DK's work ethic and the relationship between him and Russell that they've been able to develop, I think it's very, very positive knowing that you have an established, proven relationship and connection with Tyler Lockett. So with all that being said, it's much more easier for an offense and quarterback and receivers to throw together and work on their craft and talk through the offense than it is for a defense and defensive players to do that, because they need more work together against offensive players for them to build that chemistry rather than just individual or one-on-one work.
Second down. Stacey, what do we need to know about the NFI list? By the way, what does the I stand for? Injury?
Yes.
Football injury?
Yes. So I actually get a lot of questions about this every time that we talk about PUP or NFI or IR or now the COVID list. There's just so many lists, right? The commissioner's exempt list. And they all are kind of the same, but have little different rules. So NFI is non-football injury. It is something that happens off of the football field, whether that's a game or practice at the facility. So if you are injured outside of the facility in the purview of your team in any way, you are placed on the NFI list. So that could include like a freak accident, like you drop a table on your foot and the team thinks that's kind of your fault. Maybe you're working out with a trainer or doing a procedure that they didn't approve and you get injured. And the reason that that list is separate is because sometimes the team may feel like they don't owe you your base salary or part of your payment if you went out and did something that they didn't authorize. So what also lands you on this is if you are a college player that suffered an injury, say, during your final season, or had surgery related to a football injury in college that carried over into the year. So that's the case with Daryl Taylor. Usually when that stuff happens, a team won't look at it quite the same way. They aren't going to be like, we aren't going to pay you your base, because they know before you even sign your rookie deal or they draft you that you might come in on that NFI list. So that's the first thing you need to know about the list. The second thing you need to know about the list is that, like the PUP list, when you come off of it, you can't go back on it. So I think that's why the team is also being very careful to make sure that before they take Daryl Taylor off of the list, they want to make sure that he's not going to land back on it. Because then you're going to have someone that can't play but is taking up your active roster spot. So you want to make absolutely sure before someone comes off of it that they're going to stay off of it.
What if a piano falls out of a window and hits you on the head?
Well, then that's a freak accident and you land on the NFI list. And you might be dead.
Third down. What does George Kittle's new contract extension mean for his teammate, Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, call me crazy, but I actually think that this contract does have implications to Jimmy Garoppolo, because the 49ers do have a lot of talent, a lot of young talent, Tom, that is going to make the 49ers make a serious evaluation decision here during the 2020 season. Is Jimmy Garoppolo a true franchise quarterback? Because after this season, they have an out on his contract where they can cut him with no dead cap. Okay, they can have a clean break here and start fresh, start new, and it would be very advantageous from a cap standpoint to be able to keep your young, talented guys for the foreseeable future on extensions, like George Kittle, like Nick Bosa. There are some other guys coming down the pipe as well in terms of contracts. And could you see Kyle Shanahan and this group either going to another quarterback in free agency or looking towards the draft for their quarterback of the future? I think Jimmy Garoppolo has more pressure on him here in 2020 than ever to show the 49ers fans organization that he is their guy for the next couple years.
Fourth down. Okay, the Seahawks lost out on signing defensive end Everson Griffin. Who are we targeting next?
Roll Not thrilled about this. Not thrilled, but they got to move on. So to me, it really becomes a question of, do you believe that Daryl Taylor being out a couple weeks is a problem? If not, then they probably don't make any moves. They probably don't add another player unless it was Jadeveon Clowney for some, you know, crazy happenstance. Clay Matthews seems to be the guy that they're targeting next, the guy that they believe will come in and be the guy after Everson Griffin. But in my mind, I still look at this defensive tackle position, guys, and I am still pounding the table saying defensive tackle – is still a massive need for this team. It's a big hole. You have to fill that depth with good rotational players and good proven players. Then there's some out there. So I would love to see Snacks Harrison, Marcel Darius, Tim Jernigan is getting looks right now from a couple other teams. But those are the next few guys that they'll be targeting. But I think it's going to be Clay Matthews here coming soon.
Did you ever end up on the NFI list at any point, Jake?
I did not, no. I actually, during training camp, or just before training camp, my knee was bothering me pretty bad my first year with the Seahawks. And I was so scared about it, I mean, it was really bothering me. And I didn't want to tell the training staff whatsoever. And so I actually dealt with it for like the first week there with the Seahawks and didn't say a word about it because just didn't want anybody knowing anything. Not giving them any.
How many players do you think do that where they're like, if you're trying to make a roster or you're a guy that's like a free agent coming in, or even if you're just in a group that's deep, right? Like you're like, I'm competing with 10 other guys. Is it, how many guys do you think kind of try to work through serious injuries?
In that position where they actually have an injury, probably
yeah.
9 out of 10.
Man.
9 out of 10 in that situation, they're not saying a word. You don't want to give them any reason to feel like they should cut you or give somebody else an opportunity while you're trying to heal and rest. So, yeah, 9 out of 10, guys are going to tough it out.
You never had a piano fall on your head?
No, I can't say that I do. You might believe so by some of the things I say, but I have not.
All right, the halftime show is coming up next. I've got complaints about some of you guys and your Mariner fandom. Plus, we'll dig into what happened yesterday at Seahawks training camp. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Okay, well, yesterday at the end of our show, after Pete Carroll finally showed up to his presser about a half an hour late, we heard this bit of news from the head coach, cut number one, about Daryl Taylor.
He wasn't ready to go, and so we just got to there's no damage to his knee. He just has to get back from the work that he's been doing. So I'm not sure how long it's going to take. He's done some treatments and things that take a week or so to take hold and all of that. Got good response from that so far. And I'm hoping like in another couple weeks that we will know that he's ready to get back in it and go. They're working with him right now, and he's dying to get back and all. But it's just not quite right. So we just got to take our time and make sure once he gets back, he's back for good.
Ah! Another couple of weeks. By the way, this injury goes back to the surgery that he had in January for a stress fracture. But again, we talked about it yesterday. Are we expecting Daryl Taylor to come right in and, you know, go out there and be Dwight Freeney? No. But we are expecting him to come in here and learn and be available. That seems to be the biggest problem, Jake.
Well, that, and I also think that Daryl Taylor's contributions to this team is needed. I do believe that it, along with Bruce Irvin, along with Vince Maioa, you do need Daryl Taylor to come in as a rookie and to be able to contribute. He may not be the guy that's going to generate 8 sacks in his rookie season, but if he can generate good pressure, he can generate a few game-changing plays. That's why you traded up for him as high as you did, giving up the capital you did in the second round, and almost considered drafting him in the first round because the organization believes he's a legitimate talent. Now, as a rookie, and especially at the defensive line position, not being a part of the equation, not being a part of training camp from the get-go, that's an issue. That's a problem. And it will linger as he's trying to get everything, learn everything, get comfortable. So that, to me, is a little bit of a disappointing development there. And reason why I was really hopeful that they would be able to sign Everson Griffin.
Yeah, but they didn't. And you just got to hope that they have enough depth there in the meantime, at least until they decide to bring in a veteran talent. And maybe they don't, but they could try out some other options. We knew that Bruce Irvin, for instance, would come in and potentially help at strong side linebacker or maybe just as an edge rusher somewhere. But from the 425 on our Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, they said, hey, Bruce Irvin's working with the DEs right now. That, by the way, is on the Seahawks training camp stream. You can find that on 710sports.com. I'm watching it right now.
Good for you. Yeah, you know, you're actually on the stream. You're on the stream right next to
I am?
That's what I saw tweeted out by our own 710 ESPN Seattle account.
Hi, stream watchers.
Yeah, I guess you can text in if I'm wrong, if that's not what you guys are looking at. But
I'm right now, I'm looking at Jaron Reed.
Okay. All right, never mind. Next.
I often confuse us.
Well, the Mariners had a nice 4-2 lead last night, late. Pretty good effort from Taijuan Walker, but what happened in the eighth? Well, it all came unraveled. Couple of hit batsmen by Swanson. Actually, it really started because Evan White was not at first base, and he would have been able to probably pick up the ball that was thrown in the dirt. Instead, he was not there. The ball went sailing, and it was just a mishmash of bad defense. Like I said, hit batsmen, walks. The Rangers end up coming back, getting the win. And you know what? I won't say I was mad, but I was frustrated watching that. I mean, if you're going to invest your time a couple hours a night watching a baseball team, you have every right to get upset. Don't come at me right after the game, all you guys on Twitter, and say, well, Tom, at least if they lose, they're closer to the high round, or they're closer to the number one draft pick next year. Yeah, that's great and that's fine. But by that logic, you're rooting for them to lose every single game if that's the thing that you care about the most. I can't sit here and cheer against them for 60 games. I just can't do it. Now, the beauty of it as a fan is that I can root for them to win every night, and if they lose, I can take solace in that, but just wait until more than like 10 minutes after the game before you hit me with that on Twitter. And now I know that everybody's going to do it.
Oh, this is the I was going to say, like, boop, boop, like red flashing warning sign. Do not do this.
Sorry.
People, like, you're going to get 20 tweets from people being like, Tom, you're that much closer to the first overall pick. Chill out, man.
Stacey, I don't know. How do you interpret losses?
They win a game, it's going to be like, Tom, how can you be excited about this? They're further away from the number one overall pick. I think I side a little bit more with Boy Howdy, which is like, hey, it's a bit easier knowing that through five, this looks like the team that you were hoping it would be, or hoping it can, you know, there's enough of a foundation there to develop into something really good. You knew the bullpen would be bad, so if it falls apart, you kind of get the best of both worlds, where you have the guys that you're counting on performing well, and then the things that you don't really plan on keeping long-term. Obviously, there's a couple bullpen guys that they do, but you don't really have to worry about, and then you get a pretty good draft stock. So I say this as someone who I feel like is emotionally detached from wanting to win this season, so I know that. There are many Mariners fans who didn't have expectations for this season, but are still really, really bummed when they lose, especially in the way they did last night.
I fall somewhere in the middle. Like, I have that, I'm able to have that perspective right away. I don't get too frustrated, but it doesn't take me 30 or 15 minutes to need to cool off. I get frustrated within that inning and then go, yeah, okay, this is what was expected. But in the moment, it's maddening. It's maddening to see it all fall apart when you've put together such a great body of work at the beginning of the game, the middle of the game. And that's always tough to watch, especially when you're competitive. But ultimately, it's about the long-term future. And if you could acquire the first overall pick heading into this next draft, seems to be a pretty good, talented young pitcher, generational talent type of pitcher that's sitting there waiting for you potentially.
For you guys who are watching on the stream, notice Luke Wilson's short shorts? Like, those things wouldn't fit me.
His short shorts?
Yes.
Man, I tweeted about DK Metcalf short shorts the other day, and there were a couple people being like, Stacey, that's not okay. And I was like, I'm sorry. Short shorts are a very bold and intentional fashion choice, and it is in that context that I am tweeting about them. And this short shorts thing that I'm attributing to Luke Wilson and Jordan Roos, the latter of whom is, I think, now with the Raiders, like, this is, like, taken over all of Seahawks camp. Is it that, like, kids born in the late 90s have now discovered short shorts were a thing in the 70s and 80s and they're all about it? Or is it like Luke Wilson? It's one of the two. I can't decide.
I would say that it depends on what they're wearing. If it's true shorts, genuine shorts, and they're wearing them short on the team, and yeah, it stems from Luke Wilson. But you saw Jamal Adams. Those weren't shorts. Those were actual practice pants that guys wear. I actually had to wear them in Miami, and I was extremely uncomfortable wearing them at first. They're basically football pants, but they cut off the knee pad. So it's just up to where the thigh pad would be. I don't know. It's an interesting creation. I'm not entirely sure why they made them that way, but my entire time in Miami, I'm going, I just want some pants that cover my knees. Can we get those, please?
Jake, are you a socks with sandals on the beach type person?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not a socks with sandals.
I had concerns.
My dad was. My dad is a very strong socks with sandals. Yeah.
Don't do that.
Swag. Swag.
That's swagger.
There was one.
You know the amount of confidence?
Oh, so much.
Do you know the amount of confidence you have to have, how sure you have to be to wear socks and sandals?
If you wear socks with sandals, particularly socks with sandals with any form of cargo short or like a Bermuda short or anything, you have to own the room. You walk in thinking and knowing that you are the best dressed person or that you don't even care because you're like, look, I'm the alpha in this situation right now.
There was one time we were doing an event as a station with like Sean Kemp and Mike McCready and those guys down at the Hard Rock Cafe, and I showed up and I was wearing Tevas with white socks.
You were wearing what?
Tevas?
What are Tevas?
You don't know what Tevas are?
Wait.
Oh my god.
How do you spell that?
They're like sandals except they have like Velcro on towards the front.
Oh, so they're like, they look like Birkenstocks, kind of, but they're Velcro.
Kind of, but right.
You were wearing these with socks?
Wow.
With white socks.
Why?
Yeah. And I walked in, and Colin Paisley just looks at me. He goes, Tom, I love you. And he just hugs me. I don't know what I was doing.
I'm concerned. Was it intentional?
I don't know that I thought about it. This is like back in 2012. Like, whatever. Times were different. I wasn't making enough money to
2012?
Like, you know,
socks with sandals weren't cool in 2012.
I know they weren't, but I own the room. Just like you said.
I'm upset.
All right.
Now people are just sending me pictures of socks with sandals. I did what you did with the Mariners. People are going to text you about every time the Mariners lose, they're going to get a first-round pick, and people are going to text me pictures of socks with sandals.
You made your own bed.
I did. We have to lie in it.
There's a coach out there, guys, that thinks that Jamal Adams is going to get bored here in Seattle. And you're not going to be surprised once you hear who the coach is. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Jake, you didn't like my suggestion of 31 personnel. Seemed a little disappointed by that one. Welcome into The Timeline on Tom, Jake, and Stacy, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own social media timelines. If you want to have us include any, make us aware of them, we'll try to include them whenever we can. Go ahead and tag us. Now, these are for Twitter, at Stacy Rost, at JT Heaps 9, at Tom Wassel. I'm going to go ahead and get started with, I was going to go to Greg Williams, but might as well start with this. The Seahawks, as we already know, cut rookie cornerback. He was an undrafted free agent, Kima Siverand. So I assumed when we got this news and that roster move was announced that this was to make room for John Ursua, their wide receiver heading into his second year, who had had a false positive test for COVID. And because of that, they needed to add him back to the roster. Didn't think twice about it. Well, we learned today from Tom Pelissero that Kima Siverand was actually caught trying to sneak a female visitor into the team hotel, per sources. He adds that this is a clear message on the responsibility everyone has in the NFL's COVID-19 world. Put the team at risk, suffer the consequences. But there's a little thing I need to add to this. There is a bit of creativity involved. I am arguing that this is actually the love story of our generation, but many other people are saying it was just a dumb decision. Tom Pelissero adds, the woman was wearing Seahawks gear in an attempt to disguise her as a player, I'm told. Quote, it did not work. Tom.
Yeah. When they say Seahawks gear, though, do they mean that they had her like in pads? And
no, I took it as sweats or something.
Okay, but if they could see her face, then what good does it do putting her in sweats?
Well, she probably had like a hood on, like trying as much as you can to just look inconspicuous.
Would he have gotten cut if this didn't happen during COVID? Like, this to me seems
yes.
like it would be...
I think
yeah,
that this is a huge
so anyway.
Gamble for an undrafted rookie free agent in a very deep competition to try to make. Like, this doesn't happen to Bobby Wagner.
No, I mean, this stuff happens.
Well, Bobby Wagner would never do this.
It happens every year. It's really disappointing to see, and it's maddening to see players like this who waste an opportunity. The opportunity of a lifetime. The biggest job opportunity of your life, and this is what you're concerned about. It just blows my mind. And then on top of COVID, right, you have a bunch of players for the Seahawks who are trying to do everything right and do it by the book and keep everybody safe and healthy so that no one's missing practice time. And then you go out and you try and disguise this girl to come in the hotel with you. It just is selfish on so many levels. It's disappointing on so many levels. And the part is it was so premeditated. It wasn't just some spur of the moment thing. I mean, you really had to think this one through.
You planned
how
this.
How am I going to sneak this person into the hotel room? Just next level stupid.
Or
do you think that this kid? Do you think that this kid ever calls this girl again?
I think that they might. Like, what if it's his girlfriend and he didn't want to be without her?
Well, it says love story. Woman, like random woman. If it were his girlfriend, you know, Pelissero, he'd be all over that. He'd be specific.
I mean, this is basically like, you know, think of like Greek times. You know, you're sneaking your partner in a Trojan horse because you love her so much. I feel like this was like the basis of a movie somewhere. No, just me. Okay.
Yeah, just you.
If that taste that you're sensing is saltiness, you might be Jets defensive coordinator Greg Williams, because this morning he had this message about Jamal Adams in Seattle's defense.
You know, we're very multiple in how we do those things anyway. You know, we're not just a stand, you know, but Jamal may get bored there because they don't use their safety type things and all the different complexities of maybe this, not showing what they're doing as much as we do.
I feel like this is like saying like, you know, hey, they have other good players on their team, so they might not need to lean into Jamal as much, and that might not make them happy. But I think that going to the playoffs might be a pretty fun experience, too.
You know what's so funny about Greg Williams is, he has got an absolute checkered past. And secondly, he thinks he's the greatest defensive coach of all time.
He does.
And you know what? If you're going to go in and you're going to say that the Seahawks defense is boring, if it's not complex, if they're not going to be creative, go all in. You could just hear this again. Can we play that sound one more time? You hear Greg Williams say boring, and then he realizes, oh shoot, I might be going too far with this. Play it one more time.
You know, we're very multiple in how we do those things anyway. You know, we're not just a stand, you know, but Jamal may get bored there because they don't use their safety type things and all the different complexities of maybe this, not showing what they're doing as much as we do.
How do I want to rephrase this to shoot?
How do I insult someone politely? Love the sweater.
Huge dig at Pete Carroll. in this defense. But, yeah, hey, they've gone to the playoffs every year. Yeah, I'm sure Jamal Adams is going to be really bored going to the playoffs and competing for Super Bowls, while you as a Jets dysfunctional organization and as a defensive coordinator who just wants to pat himself on the back, yeah, I'm sure he's going to be missing out on that and be so bored.
Okay, but he's not talking about going to the playoffs. He's talking just about the simplicity of the scheme. And you guys ought to know that because you've been criticizing them all off season for just sticking in base 4-3.
Excuse me. I had good things to say about the base defense overall when it comes to if that's your best personnel. But there's no way you should be in almost 70% base defense when you've got as many good DBs as they do now, depending on how they use them.
Right. And here's the thing. Yes, have I said they need to use Jamal Adams around the field? Yes, I have. But at the same time, the Seahawks have done that with guys like Cam and Earl at different points. So it may not be in a exotic way that Greg Williams has done it, but they'll use him. They'll move him around. They'll put him in advantageous spots. They're going to, you know, highlight his strengths. And again, it's all about winning and winning championships. And that's what I believe Jamal Adams left in the first place, not how great the scheme highlighted him and how great Greg Williams was as a defensive coordinator. Clearly that wasn't, enough for him.
I'm going to squeeze in two more things, literally straight from the timeline. This one from Seattle Times reporter Bob Condotta, who says that one player he's not seeing out here today is Dwayne Brown. Could be getting a veteran day. That's something that he gets often during the regular season. Could just be an absence for something else. So I'm sure we'll hear about that shortly. But I also want to get to this sound. We have just enough time. This is Joe Kelly speaking for the very first time about his dust up with the Astros.
For Major League Baseball to come at me with an 8-game suspension saying that through these times in the pandemic, you created what we are trying to stay away from, where you enticed a whole team, apparently my words again, or my face, my cute face that I made, enticed the whole team to come out of their dugout towards our dugout, which is complete because I socially distanced. I walked away. I didn't get close. And I followed all the guidelines of the CDC. And people on the other side didn't. They walked out of their dugout, walked towards us. I mean, Carlos Correa spit at our team. I don't know if it was me. He spit out of his mouth.
Dude, shut up. Just because you socially distanced, that doesn't mean that you didn't throw at them. When they say that you enticed the Astros to come out after you, that's exactly what you did.
Spitting is very dangerous.
And then you mouth off to them. Dude, don't try to change the subject. You absolutely did everything that Major League Baseball says you did.
I don't know.
Shut up. Nobody cares about you. You're Joe Kelly. Go away.
What I saw was an innocent man defending himself. Jake?
I just love the revisionist history here with Joe Kelly. Like, he did nothing wrong, and the Astros are just coming. Oh, I walked away.
I walked off the mound.
And the Astros, out of nowhere, they came out and they tried to walk in. They tried to spit in my face.
I always do face exercises when I leave the mound. That's known.
It just, come on, man. Like, just own it. Yeah, I threw at them. Yeah, it caused them to get out of the bench. Good. Like, just move on. Stop trying to explain or try and continue to make them look like the bad guys. We all know.
Remember, you now have radios in your home, smart speakers. Tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. Guess what? Russell Wilson wants to cook, and he said as much. We're going to play that next for you. 710 ESPN Seattle.